Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
If you're interested, and what they've done here is if you use the coupon code PARACAST, I'll give you a 20% discount, okay? And featured guests include, of course, David Marler, Dr. Michael Masters, and other people that you're familiar with from the PARACAST. So check it out. Again, use the coupon code PARACAST. Go to UFOCongress.com, UFOCongress.com. So we're doing this show in autumn, and I quickly repeated the mantra from the 1941's horror classic, The Wolfman, which I shall not do here. But then our guest, Shane Cashman, tells me, you've got a poster for The Wolfman?
It was actually my friend, a guy I was in a band with. He had a room filled with horror posters, and that was one of them.
That is probably one of the best horror films made. I know they did a new version, but
right.
I didn't like it. I thought all the efforts to duplicate the original horror films are bad.
There was one of the George Romero ones they redid in the early 2000s that I remember liking, but it's rare. I feel like it was maybe Day of the Dead or Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, the reboot thing, I think, is a lack of creativity. You know, bring back the mummy. We have Arnold Vosloo playing the mummy, but if we remember the original film with Boris Karloff as a star, he had the perfect air of menace to the film, and I don't think that Arnold Vosloo, speaking in ancient Egyptian, had the same level of menace, although he's a really good actor.
A big problem with a lot of the reboots is that they rely so heavily on, like, CG, and it kind of takes away from, like, the old horror movies are, I think, in my opinion, scarier because they leave a lot up to the imagination, and then you can kind of fill in your biggest fear. Even, like, silly old movies. Like, I'm a huge fan of Ed Wood and Bela Lugosi and Plan 9 from Outer Space, which are kind of silly, but those movies, for whatever reason, resonate with me and stay with me. And I can't imagine someone remaking one of those now. I'd be terrified.
When you look at the original Universal horror films, they were made with care. They had great actors. And they created the proper suspense. Like there's a scene in the original Frankenstein where Boris Karloff, as the Frankenstein monster, looks at this girl putting, daisies into the water. He looks at her and smiles, and of course she throws her into the water and she drowns. But that is suggested. You don't see it. All you see is a father carrying the body of his lifeless daughter. Everything else is implied. You don't need to see it. But the other thing is that Boris Karloff played that character with sympathy. Everyone felt bad for the monster. He didn't frighten people so much as you forgave the fact that he was in a position he never asked for.
Yeah, exactly. It makes it so much more relatable and in a terrifying way. That kind of stuff is lost in today's horror movies. I don't know if I've seen any that lately that I feel like I've really connected to. Even if it's a protagonist who's supposed to be relatable, I don't think I care about.
Universal wanted to reboot the horror film, so they bring back another reboot of The Mummy. The Mummy is a woman. The star is Tom Cruise. A sure sign of failure.
Hey, Tom Cruise is one of our greatest actors living, man. What are you talking about?
Ethan Hunt, he's great. Also in the movie A Few Good Men, he was terrific in that film. Born on the 4th of July, I thought he was terrific, but he's also had his share of clunkers, as they say. But he's a great guy at playing Tom Cruise.
For me, with Tom Cruise, I like Interview with a Vampire, which that's another thing they've rebooted. It's on AMC now, I think. I love Vanilla Sky. And that movie's kind of terrifying. It's not really a horror movie, but it could be.
I don't know how we get started in this conversation, but we are talking to Shane Cashman, who is host, it says here, of a podcast called Tales from the Inverted World. That sounds like multiverse. Is that the intention? What's the intention of the title?
The intention of the title, honestly, is that the world, to me right now, feels like it's upside down. So all the stories I'm telling, which are all true stories and deeply investigated stories, they might sound outlandish, ridiculous, products of some type of paranoid delusion, but they are based in reality. So my whole thing is that we are living in the inverted world. Yeah, I spend a lot of time going out on the ground researching different stories, from murder cover-ups, serial killers, ghost encounters, and whatnot. And I write a long-form narrative about it.
What got you started in this strange business?
Well, I started freelancing for magazines a while ago. I would say 15 years ago. And I was pretty much always writing about something dark or mysterious. I don't know why. Might have been because I grew up in a really old house. I grew up in a house from the 1700s in the Hudson Valley. So the woods did a number on me, the dark woods at night. And I became fascinated with the things that scared me. Then I got into Unsolved Mysteries and X-Files and Twin Peaks. And then I just turned into the idea of, I want to write these stories, but I wanted to find the ones that people had claimed to have encountered in real life. You know, I can't prove it all, but I like hearing people's stories, and I like seeing the places in which the things supposedly happened. So about a year ago, we launched Tales from the Inverted World, which has been, it turned into now two books in 1 year, and I'm already at work on a third.
Well, you keep this going, you'll become a writer.
I might. I'll tell my mom eventually I'm a writer.
So does your mom ask you when you're going to have a real job?
No, she actually, now that she sees me actually living, she's not afraid. I think I'm 37 now, so there's a good 35, 36 years of terror of how I was going to do this. I had a lot of weird jobs on the side. I was always writing, but I was a professor for 10 years, and while I was a professor, I was a furniture mover, and while I was doing that, I was working for magazines. So, yeah.
Okay, let me get this in sequence here. You're a professor at college?
I was. For about 10 years, I was an adjunct professor at two different colleges where I taught journalism and fiction.
Okay. My son has a degree in journalism, so that's interesting. And you're moving furniture on the side. Evidently, adjunct professors don't get a big salary.
That was a job I loved. I love teaching. But the adjuncts get nothing. I don't know if, do you know about adjunct professors? Like, at one of my colleges, there was 400 professors, 300 of them were adjuncts. And by an adjunct, I think the definition is, we're just a temporary replacement. So you get paid very little, but you work full time, and it's a pain.
You're kind of like a substitute teacher.
Yeah, it's a glorified sub. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But you have this big title, so it's a highfalutin title and a lowfalutin salary. That's not a word. I made it up, see? I mean, I can still make up words at my age.
It works. It was even lower than lowfalutin. It was embarrassing. But, you know, there was always a dream that I would make it up into a real teaching job. But I got out of that. I left teaching almost exactly a year ago, and it was a tough decision. But the job I'm at now is actually a real job, and I'm grateful for it. So I was able to leave, and we pretty much packed up and left New York, where my wife and I were born and raised, and never thought that would happen. And now we're, you know, like in West Virginia, which we're loving.
Ah, home of the Mothman. What part of New York?
That's right. We're in the Panhandle, about 2 hours outside of D.C., in the mountains. It's beautiful.
What part of New York are you from?
Oh, we are from the Hudson Valley. I grew up in West Point, New York, but the military academy.
Okay, our guest is Shane Cashman, and we have a copy of a book here called Tales from the Inverted World, and it's not the Upside Down. Our co-host is Tim Swartz, who inhabits conspiracyjournal.com. You're in
the Paracast. You're in the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here...
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Should let your listeners know that in future episodes, we'll be featuring Nick Redfern talking about a brand new book about pyramids and such. And Kevin Randall is due to join us in the near future. We'll let you know. Stay with us. Shane Cashman is telling us how he got involved in writing about the paranormal. And, of course, his book is Tales from the Inverted World, one of his books. And I want to jump into one chapter that just kind of caught my attention as I'm looking the thing over here right now. I have the PDF version so I can scroll through it without making noises of pages moving. And that is... The aliens are not here to save us. That's a revelation, because if they're here to save us, they do a pretty bad job of it.
Yeah, they do. That was a fun story. Actually, that story is based around my hometown. You guys might know it. Pine Bush? Have you heard of Pine Bush, New York?
I have, yes. I'm from Brooklyn, so I hear about these things occasionally.
Okay. Yeah, Pine Bush. Pine Bush is known... for, like, the last 200 years of having these weird UFO encounters. There's a cemetery there from the 19th century where people in, I believe, the turn of the century, around 1905 or 1906, saw columns of fire emerging from the ground in the cemetery. There's people who claim to see, you know, your typical triangle with lights blinking in the sky. The town, for whatever reason... has a lot of weird things going on. But my story starts with this one man who is from Peekskill, New York, which is across the river, the Hudson River, and he has been abducted, so he says, since the age of, the age of 7, could be wrong. So the main character of the story I wrote is from Peekskill, New York, and he claims to have been abducted since he was about, 7 or 8, and he has very vivid memories of being carried out of his window, flying over Peekskill, New York, and seeing the trees, seeing the river. And this happened soon after. I think he had a traumatic experience as a child, and it's been going on in his life for about 40 years. He marries his wife. He doesn't tell really a lot of people about these experiences. And then eventually... him and his wife moved to Pine Bush, New York, where he opens up the newspaper and sees a wanted ad for people who've been abducted. And it's like a little group of people who meet at a local church to have coffee and talk about their abductions. So that's kind of where the story picks up. And I go through this man's history of all the aliens he claims to have met, and Pine Bush in particular. And this happened to coincide with Pine Bush's UFO Fest, which happens every year. If anyone's ever in the area or if ever wants to travel to the Hudson Valley in New York, it's worth going. There's people from MUFON there. There are a ton of people dressed up in some wild costumes, a lot of vendors, and there's a really cool UFO museum as well.
Of course, Hudson Valley has been home for UFO sightings. Now, getting back to this person who was abducted and has undergone experiences What kind of traumatic experience did he have? Is this something you care to mention?
Yeah. I think I mentioned it in the story. He loses a parent early on, and that, I think, has some effect on him. But he claims his abductions actually predated that traumatic event. I think they might have increased afterwards. He loses one parent early on, and then his other parent, I think it was his father, dies maybe 5 years later. I asked him if he attributes the trauma to any of his experiences. He says he doesn't know. He says he likes to think that the aliens are studying him because of his traumatic experiences, and that he also believes he's a psychic and that he can see certain things in the future. So it's hard things to prove, but he's got some pretty ridiculous stories that I love talking about. And in Pine Bush, for whatever reason, people say ley lines. People say there's some type of crystals in the ground. Whatever it is, a lot of people there share very similar stories to him from also their childhood in the surrounding area. So for me, I can witness all that.
This always gets me a troublesome issue. Has he undergone hypnotic regression for any of this?
No, not that I believe. Not that he said. The only thing I know he did, but that wasn't hypnotic. He got a crazy degree in it's a spiritual awakening of alien abductions. So that's all I know he's done in terms of trying to find some type of healing or solace is writing a thesis on his abductions. And then he tried to help people break out of their trauma by, it's kind of like making them revisit their trauma in terms of the alien abduction. And he believes that if they can do that, and if they can find peace in their abductions, they can find a peace in their life. Because he thinks a lot of people who have been abducted, it kind of consumes their life. And he doesn't want it to be the only thing that consumes them. He wants them to find hope in it, and that it's actually a joyous thing.
I enjoyed that story in particular because of, at one point, he's musing about his encounters. And at one point he says he's also not entirely sure that he's actually met the aliens themselves. Rather, he thinks it's possible he's only met their avatars, or their organic beings that have been bred only for space travel. Now, that's something that's been, bandied about a little bit within the UFO community, but, I mean, that's just that those few words, that's a very big idea.
I love that idea. I love this guy because we spent hours and hours talking about normal everyday stuff, and then we just go into this and I he knows a lot, and what people might hear him and think he's crazy and stuff, but he's a really smart man and he deeply believes this. So when he talked about that in particular, all I could think about was, we right now in our civilization are just getting into the metaverse. So if you accelerate that hundreds or thousands of years, I could see us getting to a point where we have avatars that we're sending out into the so-called real world to do our bidding. So it's not so beyond the realm of reason for some advanced species somewhere else, maybe the interdimensional, maybe just far, far away in the solar system, what have you, to, they realize they can't physically come here, so they've got to grow some organic suit or send some type of avatar to do whatever it is they want to do to study us, which is what this guy believes, is that they're here just to study us.
Well, if they're going to study us, I kind of think they can do it in a more user-friendly fashion. That's what bothers me about abductions.
Yeah, it's always so barbaric.
It's as if they have no respect for humans, whatever. We're just like insects to them.
Well, maybe they are. I will say, in the alien's defense, in terms of this specific story, he makes it out that some aliens do have compassion and some don't, and that he's met all these different types of aliens, and he's actually been, according to him, abducted to help heal aliens, I think by his very presence. I forget how it worked, but as, according to him, he remembers helping heal some type of leader of this, of one of the aliens on one of their ships. So I think some of them maybe have compassion for us and others don't, but that's, that's how humans are. Some people save the spider from the bathroom and let it go outside, and other people squash it under their boot.
Don't ask me what I do. Shane Cashman, Tim Swartz, Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Should let your listeners know that in future episodes, we'll be featuring Nick Redfern talking about a brand new book about pyramids and such. And Kevin Randall is due to join us in the near future. We'll let you know. Stay with us. Shane Cashman is telling us how he got involved in writing about the paranormal. And, of course, his book is Tales from the Inverted World, one of his books. And I want to jump into one chapter that just kind of caught my attention as I'm looking the thing over here right now. I have the PDF version so I can scroll through it without making noises of pages moving. And that is, the aliens are not here to save us. That's a revelation, because if they're here to save us, they do a pretty bad job of it.
Yeah, they do. That was a fun story. Actually, that story is based around my hometown. You guys might know it. Pine Bush? Have you heard of Pine Bush, New York?
I have, yes. I'm from Brooklyn, so I hear about these things occasionally.
Okay. Yeah, Pine Bush. Pine Bush is known for, like, the last 200 years of having these weird UFO encounters. There's a cemetery there from the 19th century where people in, I believe, the turn of the century, around 1905 or 1906, saw columns of fire emerging from the ground in the cemetery. There's people who claim to see, you know, your typical triangle with lights blinking in the sky. The town, for whatever reason, has a lot of weird things going on. But my story starts with this one man who is from Peekskill, New York, which is across the river, the Hudson River, and he has been abducted, so he says, since the age of, I believe it was, I want to say the age of 7, could be wrong. So the main character of the story I wrote is from Peekskill, New York, and he claims to have been abducted since he was about, I think, 7 or 8, and he has very vivid memories of being carried out of his window, flying over Peekskill, New York.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest-rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Maruso reporting. The New York City Police Department on Friday identified 4 suspects who were allegedly part of a group of people wearing neon green bodysuits on a Manhattan subway train who attacked 2 teenagers. The suspects were identified as Keonti Alston, Myram Youssef, Dariana Puguero, all 26, and 34-year-old Emily Soto as being among the group captured on camera punching and tossing around 2 19-year-old women in the Times Square subway station early Sunday. As gas prices have risen for 15 consecutive days and OPEC announced production cuts, which could drive prices even higher, Fox News contributor and former White House Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove argued Republicans stand a good chance of gaining control in the Senate after the midterm election on Cavuto Live Saturday, as inflation remains a top concern for all voters. This is USA Radio News.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do yourself a favor. Do us all a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I'm kind of the insect killer kind of person, which means insects will not likely. Shane and Gene and Tim, we're talking about a case that Shane has reported in his book about UFOs and about, they're not here to save us. Or at least in the case of this particular person that you're talking about here. You mentioned that he allegedly helped save the life of one of the space people. How so?
It's been about a year since I wrote this one, so forgive me if I get this wrong for anyone who's actually listened or read the book, but I believe he said he remembers waking up on a ship and he sees a group of these, I think they were small grays, and he could tell by their faces that they were upset. They were commuting through telekinesis, and they were like bringing him to an older, sickly version of them. And he assumed it was a leader. I think it was just his presence. I think they maybe they touched, and it kind of healed him, and then there was like a feeling of elation. And he felt really good. In terms of aliens saving us, I can't say, but he, according to him, he saved some aliens. And he felt pretty good about it. So, you know, good on him.
Strange that we'd need an alien to have a human save them.
Yeah. You know, I had just finished writing another story for this book about the mice and rat experiments. And one of the people I talked to talked about, you know, one of those experiments where they would take an old dying mouse and sew it to a new, like a young mouse, and how the young mouse would deteriorate, but the old mouse would start to feel better and almost like replenish. And it made me think of that in a weird way, of those mice sewn together. This guy in his spaceship with the aliens was kind of like that young mouse, perhaps giving some type of rejuvenation to the dying alien.
Okay, that's a way of absorbing energy in a sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a vampire.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of this vampiric stuff is possible, whether it's, you know, aliens or just through our own energy. I mean, look at how people who are extremely negative live their lives, and I can see that their own negativity kind of be a vampirism on those around them. It's certainly possible.
It doesn't always have to be negative. But strangely enough, I was hospitalized on August 1st. I spent 4 days in a hospital and had recovered after that for a period of time. During that time, the dog whose bark you heard before we started this episode, that little tiny guy, he retreated into himself. He'd go out, of course, and do his stuff. But when it came to meals, he'd skip the meals. And for a period of time, he limped on one of his legs.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they know. It's like, you know, our cats, they knew immediately when my wife was pregnant with our firstborn. They just treated her differently. I grew up on a farm. I think my first friends were animals. So I saw them. They're very receptive to human feelings. That's for sure. Horses, for sure. I mean, you could visibly see a sadness in a horse's eye, especially if they were sick or if they had witnessed another horse be sick or even die.
Growing up where you did, I mean, you know, the Hudson Valley is, as we had talked about previously, you know, a lot of UFO sightings, and you said that you grew up in a pretty old house. You know, any weird experiences of your own when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that house, we moved in there in 1986. I was a year old. And I think rather quickly, my parents started just sensing weird things. And then it would be, you know, the lights going off and weird sounds in the attic. And you could attribute those to an old house, and we did that a lot of the time. But then it would be really strange sounds in the attic. And and it sounds like stereotypical to even say it out loud at this point, but it really did sound like chains clanking. but it's an extremely old house. And we found out that at one point it was part of the Underground Railroad, and there's a secret passageway that we actually had never been in for 30 years in that house. And I had only gone into it like 2 years ago. I found my way in actually during the COVID lockdowns. I was like, I think I'm going to find this passageway. And it's just a weird empty space where you could imagine people hiding or who knows what. But, yeah, that turned into, you know, as a young kid, the weird sounds would get to me, and I had a little sleep paralysis every now and then. I would see those, like blue tentacles on the ceilings, and maybe I was just dreaming. I don't know, but it would freak me out. And I would eventually learn, I think around the age of 12 or 13, that a young boy by the name of Jimmy died in our house. He was actually shot dead by his brother. And I was sleeping in his bedroom. And he had been shot dead in our, like, basically it's a basement, but it's more like a back room. It's weird. The house is built into a hill, so half the house is underground. And once we found out about Jimmy's death, we just started talking to Jimmy as if he was part of the family, and then things kind of calmed down. So whether or not Jimmy was actually a presence, I don't know, but we all, my parents, my two younger sisters, we just always had Jimmy. We always talked to Jimmy. He had dinner with us. So it's this very nonchalant thing going on between us and Jimmy. And then when I wrote this book that we are talking about now, the last Inverted World book, I decided to investigate Jimmy's death because it was just kind of like a local legend, you know, like I'd always heard about it. But then the more I started talking to people, the more either the story would change. Some people would even say he never existed. Other people would say he didn't die there. It was another person. So I was like, what is going on here? And then am I basing my relationship with this ghost off of, you know, all just fake news? Like, what is going on? So I spent a few months really trying to figure out what happened. And the property where I grew up, so my parents they're coaches for the equestrian team. So that's why we grew up on a horse farm. So we're in the woods, but it's military academy property. So the military police are the ones who dealt with that incident. It was Super Bowl Sunday, 1979. So dealing with them, it was like super tight-lipped. No one had anything. They claimed to have no records of this murder. The military police told me it never happened. they told me if I wanted to ask anybody else, I could go to the Pentagon, basically, where they have the archives. So I emailed them. I filed a report to, you know, Freedom of Information Act to get that. And they told me it never happened. There's no evidence of this. So I was starting to really be bummed, which is a weird feeling, because I didn't want to be bummed that this kid didn't die. I was actually kind of happy that maybe a murder didn't happen. But I also just couldn't believe it was not true, because so many people in my town had told me about it. Even if it was different each time a little bit, I believed in it. So then I went and pretty much went blind looking at the microfilm in our local library over like a decade, from the early 70s to late 70s. Because I knew it had to be around that time, because everyone did say it happened around a Super Bowl Sunday in the 70s. So I'm there squinting at this terrible microfilm, and I freaking finally find one little paragraph about a boy named Jimmy who was shot on Super Bowl Sunday by his brother at my old house. And I was like floored. I was really sad because, like, damn, it happened. Like, you got this kid. But I was also like, okay, at least I know there is some truth to this, because here it is, this old article that I found that was outside of the domain of the military, where they couldn't just pigeonhole it. Because, you know, I grew up on this military property, and I knew if I did some bad stuff, which I did plenty, I'd have to do it really well and keep it hidden from everybody, because my parents could get kicked out. It was pretty tough on the military property. You know, there's all these soldiers always roaming the woods, and there's shooting happening and cannon blasts and all this stuff. So if this article existed, it must have happened, and I was pretty certain that the military probably had to cover it up for any number of reasons. Who knows why?
We got more of Shane and Gene and Tim. Means you're in
the Terrorcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special
EMDR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
This is Micah Hanks of the Gray Alien Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Well, I can see when the military loves to cover things up, so I can see that. I wanted to just go back to one thing I noticed in the book Inverted World, and that is when you're talking about that abductee, it says, quote, he believes the aliens have the ability to manipulate your memory, possibly as an attempt to keep their secret secret. But they have that ability, and I ask this of all people who talk about abductions, how do we know the memory of the abduction is real?
Right, right. Yeah, I think you have to be skeptical of absolutely everything you hear at any of these encounters. And it's unfortunate because I want to believe everything, and I love talking to people, but you just don't know. It could be a number of things. Like, it could be my labs. It could be, you know, the military doing this. It could be aliens doing this. It could be aliens created by the military doing this, you know. And we also know that eyewitness accounts in anything are unfortunately pretty unreliable. Even with horrible things like with crime that happened in daylight in the middle of the street. So it's hard. It's hard. With him, I could say there's dozens of experiences with him. And, you know, what I look at is so many people who he doesn't know, who haven't heard his story, because he's not like a well-known person in his community. He is, but people from like Phoenix or people from Saskatoon, and they have very similar stories. So there's something there. I don't know what it is. I think it's hard to trust people's memories. And even he says it there was what you quoted. So we ought to take it all with a grain of salt.
I kind of worry about all or most UFO abduction cases. I also consider whether a small number of these may have some kind of government connection. And I think of Barney and Betty Hill living near a military base. And most of their friends are in the military. And I think, you know what? Wait a minute. If the military has been doing experiments, here we have an interracial couple at a time before the Civil Rights Act, and there's certainly discrimination involved, maybe that made them ideal candidates. They could have been the victim of some kind of government experiment.
I want to believe in aliens, and I believe there's a lot out there that we just don't know yet, maybe never will. But one thing I know for certain is that our government is extremely nefarious, and they're willing to do anything to its own citizens. I always point to Tuskegee, especially if you want to talk about, you know, singling out a minority and doing what they did to those men at Tuskegee and giving them syphilis and then just watching them suffer for decades. You know, our government is capable of extreme barbarism. So, yeah, when I see that story or any abduction cases, especially ones that happen around military bases, I'm extremely skeptical and think it's probably just the government, because we all know that they're pretty terrible. And if you read that report that came out, I think last June, about the new UAP situation and what it could be, and, you know, they had the congressional hearings, the majority of those were just things that happened around military bases. So then you could say, is it the aliens observing technology on our military bases, or is it the military doing stuff just where they were, you know, which is where I tend to believe things are probably happening.
The thing about a lot of abduction cases, and the one that you wrote about particularly, is that, you know, there are so many of them where the person isn't seeking publicity. They just know that they are having strange experiences and are trying to deal with it the best way that they can. Because unfortunately, you can't go to a therapist, usually, and say, you know, I'm being abducted by aliens, you know, I mean, that's a good way to end up with a, you know, all kinds of mind-altering prescriptions. So, you know, I mean, you know, and this guy, like so many others, is just trying to live his life.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot of the people, I think you can also tell when people are looking for some type of notoriety through their story, and the story starts to have that whiff of, you know, just being extremely false and put on. But with a lot of the people I talk to, like this man in particular, I think they just want someone to hear their story. And whether or not I come out and just be like, I believe you, sir, 100%, I don't think that really matters as much as me just listening to them and not denouncing them. Because I'm not here to just be like, this person is insane, you know, because insane things happen. I've seen insane things. I have experienced insane things. Weird things happen. I don't know what exactly they might all be, but I think a lot of these people just want to be heard and be like, I want to tell my story in a way that I'm not going to be sensationalized. I'm not going to be turned into some weird clickbait or a freak. You know, one of my favorite writers was this guy from like the 50s. His name was Joseph Mitchell. He wrote a book I love called Up in the Old Hotel. And he was from, in New York City. And he would just walk around and talk to the people on the fringes of society. Now, I'm not saying I'm talking to the people on the fringes of society, but I'm definitely hearing ideas that exist on the fringes of society. And, you know, what I learned from Joseph Mitchell is that you got to treat them with some respect and have empathy and hear them out and share their story as objectively as I can. And where it's possible, I will add my opinion, but I try not to ever be condescending. Unless they're a total jerk to me, then I can have some fun.
Well, a lot of these people and a lot of these cases, I mean, they are operating a lot of times in a vacuum. I mean, they haven't, you know, done the research to see what's going on with others who are reporting the same kind of experiences, yet there's so much commonality between these stories that, I mean, you could almost have like, you know, you could almost play bingo with these stories and, you know, and check off the same situations with these people who can be, you know, living their lives miles, years apart, generations apart.
Yep. Yep. Oh, yeah. Generations apart. That's, to me, the scariest part is that they can, you know, and that right there is what sometimes makes me think, okay, maybe it's not just the government, because there are stories, like in particular the stuff that happened in Pine Bush at the turn of the century. At least the government that we know, that is the face of the government, doesn't seem like they are capable of some of these things that people claim to have seen at the turn of the century. But then, you know, who knows? That could mean, okay, well, there's advanced species visiting us, or our government just has a lot of stuff, and they're way more advanced than we even know. You know, that remains to be seen.
The problem, of course, here is that there are possibly too many people in the government who don't realize these are people they're dealing with. To them, they're just statistics they can manipulate.
Exactly. It's like what you were saying earlier about the way aliens might view us as insects. You know, that's how I see the government seeing us.
Well, it depends. I think most people who work for the government are just regular people that's trying to do their job.
Yeah.
But there are people in power who sometimes don't care about anything but their power. And that's why we have things like, well, the possibility that there's a secret to the UFO mystery or UAP mystery that's being kept by the government and may even be withheld from people with transitory positions like a president. Well, he's there for, or she maybe in the future, will be there for 4 years or 8 years. They are temporary occupants. They do not have the need to know, so they won't know.
Yeah, I don't think presidents really know much at all. I forget who it was, though. Who was friends with Jackie Gleason? Was it Eisenhower? Yeah, Jackie Gleason was friends with, was it Nixon, who he claimed that he took him in the dead of night to go look at some alien corpses? Do you know that story?
Yes.
So the thing that's funny about that, and in relation to the story you're referencing in my book about the aliens not here to save us, is the man who's the main character in my investigation is from Peekskill, New York. Jackie Gleason lived in Peekskill, New York. Jackie Gleason also, as we all know, if you're listening to this show in particular, was a big alien person. He was obsessed with aliens, so much so that in Peekskill, New York, he built, I believe, three houses that were the shape of flying saucers. Have you ever seen those? They're really cool.
I've seen the pictures of, like, his main house, and plus that house has just this fantastic library all of the material that he collected over the years.
It's so good. So in terms of presidents knowing nothing, I tend to believe that. But if you want to take Jackie Gleason's story and think it's perhaps true, then maybe Nixon had some access to aliens, because I forget, his widow wrote the book saying that when he came back, when Gleason came back from seeing the corpses of the aliens, he was forever changed.
Now, to be fair to a lot of people in our audience who are skeptical about such things, yes, it is perfectly true that these stories of encounters with presidents and aliens, and the Jackie Gleason story in particular, might be a tad suspicious, shall we say, but we'll go on with that consideration. With Shane and Gene and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick, easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy to take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka Fam, works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene, 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W, 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya, 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.